On Memorial Day weekend in 1970, an estimated 60,000, mostly hippies and college-age students, invaded the village of Haworth, Illinois, population 1,200.
The newspaper said this hippie tide hits Haworth. That was an accurate description.
Town was like a zoo.
They descended on this small McLean County town to attend a rock festival named Incident at Kickapoo Creek.
I remember like REO Speedwagons, those type of groups. What I remember most about the music at Kickapoo Creek was probably a couple of the big name bands.
And three of those big bands were Canned Heat, Country Joe and the Fish, and the Butterfield Blues Band, all who had played Woodstock 9 months prior. B.B. King was there, as was Ted Nugent.
A group called Smith.
Michael McDonald, he had a band from St. Louis.
The Who was going to be there.
Were the Beatles going to be there? Were the Beatles going to get back together?
I'd like to do a song now just dedicated to everybody that's here today.
Though it is still one of the largest, if most infamous, events ever to be held in McLean County, it's almost as if, officially, it never happened.
There isn't a whole lot written about this thing, and it really has taken this long to tell the story accurately.
That's Normal native R.C. Raycraft. He's a producer by trade, with credits including the Discovery Channel and the BBC. He says even 25 years after the festival, the village of Haworth was giving him and his fledgling movie a cold shoulder.
Going in 95, 2000 to go meet with the board at Haworth to see if we could do something with Kickapoo, and it was like going to the parole board.
The board, you mean city council?
The city council.
Okay.
For those years, I knew that it was going to be like trying to get parole, and that they didn't want to have anything to do with it, and they were embarrassed by it.
The townsfolk boarded up the windows and locked up their children and were very, very frightened because the hippies are coming, the hippies are coming.
I get high all day, I feel fine.
Raycraft's interest in the Incident at Kickapoo Creek Festival began as a teen. He was intrigued by a poster of the festival given to him by his father. His interest grew when he acquired a bootleg vinyl of the stage show. The aha moment came when he was in his 20s. He was working as a producer of police shows, similar to Cops in Champaign-Urbana.
There was a guy that owned a production company that transferred films to video. One night while I was waiting to cut my programs, he was finishing up transferring films, and there were three rolls of three-minute films of the incident at Kickapoo Creek.
But the film that caught his attention wasn't a documentation of what happened on stage. Raycraft was viewing police video, but I'm getting a bit ahead of myself.
We're not really ready to play yet. Y'all had a good time so far, though?
The incident at Kickapoo Creek Rock Festival was the brainchild of Bloomington's L. David Lewis, whose family owned a farm outside of Haworth. Raycraft says Lewis saw what happened at Woodstock and attempted to recreate it in McLean County.
Oh, I think that he saw financially that if they would have done a couple things differently, they could have made a lot of money, and he took advantage of the weaknesses of Woodstock as far as it being a free festival and monetized it.
I will always think about you.
Paul Welch was the McLean County State's attorney at the time, and he was not amused with what Lewis was attempting to pull off, so he filed an injunction against Lewis a day before the concert. When Lewis moved forward with the festival, a festival that included a motorcycle gang as security,
Paul Welch sent in two undercover officers from Normal to record all of the wild and bizarre happenings that took place.
Kickapoo Rock Festival, which was pretty exciting to be at. One reason, of course, was because of all the naked people.
How many people? I think we're around 60,000 strong.
The police video became instrumental to Raycraft's movie about the incident at Kickapoo Creek, and he says it was Welch who later helped him acquire other evidence still in storage.
This was years later. There was a box inside of the state's attorney's office in the closet. When I approached him about it, he said, yeah, this box is here. You know, this whole closet, we're waiting to get the next intern because we're going to throw all this away. So if there's anything in here you want, take it.
So Raycraft took the boxes and said one of them had exactly what he was looking for, including paperwork, film, and the basic skeleton of the story.
And I think the reason it was all there is because the promoter left. So they had all the evidence, but they never used it against him in court because he disappeared and they tried him in absentia.
With police film and paperwork in hand, Raycraft knew he had something special. And he realized the real story of the festival was offstage, partially because there wasn't a whole lot of film of what happened on stage, but mostly because Raycraft was riveted by the dynamic between the gentleman farmer promoter L. David Lewis and McLean County State's attorney Paul Welch.
And both made it clear in the newspaper, one, Welch, I'm going to stop the festival. Two, Lewis, promoter, festival's going on. Something was going to happen one way or the other.
And something did happen. I mean, the festival happened. The attorney had the farmer arrested.
At the bank, because he had a loaded .38 and a bag full of cash.
As soon as the rock festival was over, they said that he took off and went to Mexico.
There were scuttlebutt rumors that he'd taken all the money and hired a jet and went somewhere.
He might end up buried out in the desert.
It was rumored that he died, that he was dead.
Those who know the story know that 42-year-old Lewis made bail and left. He left his wife. He left his work and his country. He left with the cash he made from the festival and with his teenage secretary.
The interesting thing about that is everybody talks about D.B. Cooper. David Lewis was the D.B. Cooper of rock and roll a year before D.B. Cooper, and Lewis took off with more cash than D.B. Cooper did and never got caught and lived to tell the story.
Ray Craft says Lewis eventually returned to the United States, and he eventually tracked him down.
Yeah, that's something that's the fourth act of my film that I don't really like to go into great detail about, because you got to have that fourth act twist in any noir documentary.
Is this new to the showing, or this showed in 2010 as well?
I've always brought the promoter in, but not as slap in your face as I did this time.
Okay, so that is different.
Well, there's a lot of animosity between those guys. They hated each other's guts.
Now, Ray Craft had a storyline to go along with the bootleg vinyl of the stage show and the police video and evidence of what happened offstage. The only thing missing? The principals to tell their side of the story.
And the smartest thing that I ever did regarding this project is I asked everybody the same questions. You don't always get the same perspective, but you get the same answers.
So you can get people sort of talking to each other that weren't talking to each other?
You know, that's the magic in the film is, yeah, people start talking about something and then somebody else talks about the same thing, and it's just like people are having conversations on film.
My name is Dave Lewis. I am the promoter of the infamous incident at Kickapoo Creek.
Mr. Lewis, if you'd have done it right and in accord with the best interests of the public in general, you might have been able to make your money without...
The film for Incident at Kickapoo Creek has been shown in Central Illinois every 5 years, beginning in 1995. Ray Craft says by tinkering over the years and being able to transfer the original police tape to high definition has allowed the movie to evolve and improve.
There are a lot of things that I missed in the past because I was working off of a working copy. When you start over from scratch with something, a lot of light bulbs go off because you find these hidden jewels.
Are you talking about technology? Or are you talking about the interviews or the storytelling itself?
The technology is what it is, but character development certainly has changed a lot, which has really been great for the story because you feel for these characters. You like them one way or the other. The movie's a Western, okay? There's the good guys and the bad guys, and I present it where you, the audience, get to choose who's the good guys and who's the bad guys.